This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's something of a Fresh Air tradition to end the year by asking some of our critics to stop by with their 10 best lists. Fresh Air rock critic Ken Tucker is here to play some of the recordings on his 10 best list. You might want to get out a pen and paper because after he plays some of his picks, he'll run through the whole list. Happy New Year, Ken.
Same to you.
Let's open with your record of the year, and that way we won't have to pretend we're building up to a thrilling climax.
Right. My record of the year is Matthew Sweet's 100% Fun. To me, this was the record that got me through ups and downs, because it just lasts through the whole year. It's got just a lot of really good, strong melodies, a lot of really raw guitar playing. I really like the kind of sweet and sour quality to it, the way he has these very sweet tunes sung with this very sour sensibility. I think he's just a really good singer-songwriter. And the cut I'd like to play is called Sick of Myself.
Matthew Sweet from his CD 100% Fun, which is number one on our rock critic Ken Tucker's top 10 list of 1995. Ken, any big events in music or the music industry in 1995 that you want to make note of, for better or worse?
Well, to me, it was a year of big non-events. I mean, the things that got publicity were the things that, to me, were least interesting about the year. I'm thinking about things like, well, on a musical level, the extraordinary commercial success of Hootie and the Blowfish, 11 million copies sold of completely derivative, pleasant, unremarkable sort of music. There were events like the opening of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, a place that I cannot imagine I would less want to visit. I guess I would go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame the way I might go to Las Vegas as a goof. But to me, to sort of enshrine stuff and go there and ponder it seems to me to be antithetical to the spirit of the music. And then there were things like, the sudden resurrection of the Beatles. ABC ran the 6-hour documentary on television, and their greatest hits collection suddenly vaulted into the number one position. But it didn't. The TV special failed for me because it failed to place them in any kind of new context or to tell us anything new about the Beatles. There were also artists that got a lot of attention that failed to sort of back it up with the work. I mean, Michael Jackson made a tremendous splash in the middle of the year with this collection called History, and the new material on it really wasn't worthy of him particularly. And I also thought that Bruce Springsteen's release was a relative failure. I mean, I thought it was indicative of the kind of exhaustion in his style that he would put out this very slow, maundering sort of folk record.
Well, several of the trends or non-events that you mentioned were really orchestrated by the PR industry, as opposed to being the kind of a event because music is great and people just fall in love with it.
Yeah.
And something changes musically or culturally.
Yeah, I think that's true. And anything like that, it can't be orchestrated. It's something that has to happen. I mean, we certainly learned that just a few years ago with the success of Nirvana, a band that just came out of nowhere that the music industry had no idea would do as well as it did, and yet it ended up, changing the face of popular music for the year and a half that it was a very vital commercial group.
Why don't we get to another record from your top 10 list?
Yeah, I have one by an old-timer named Neil Young, who got together with a bunch of whippersnappers called Pearl Jam, and they put out an album called Mirror Ball, which is really a terrific album. Neil Young is one of those guys, in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame who has refused to be ossified, refused to be categorized. I think he's still making really strong, vital music. The cut I'd like to play is called Downtown.
Neil Young from the CD Mirror Ball, and joining us is Fresh Air rock critic Ken Tucker, and he's playing us some recordings from his top 10 list from 1995. Well, Ken, you mention some of the non-events of 1995. Any interesting new ideas to mention in pop?
Well, certainly the most pervasive theme I've read in terms of pop music coverage this year is this whole idea of authenticity. The idea of, you know, the two most interesting things I read all year, one was from Art Forum, and another was a piece in The Source, which is a magazine about rap music. In both places, cultural critics debated the idea of whether the person performing the song really had to be that person, whether the person and the persona were the same, whether this kind of straitjacket of whether your image had to be you. In terms of gangster rappers, there's a very fierce debate among African-American music critics about whether, you know, do you have to be a thug to sing about this sort of thuggishness? And the piece in Art Forum by the English critic John Savage made the point that someone like Bruce Springsteen is just straitjacketed by the idea that he has to now, as a multimillionaire, suddenly divest himself of his wealth and fame and become this working class hero every time he walks into the recording studio. To me, that does seem to be one reason why someone like Springsteen makes such constricted music at this point, because he just doesn't feel that freedom. I think a lot of pop groups in England especially are very aware of this kind of idea, and a band like Oasis, this young pop band, feels free to take from the whole history of rock and roll. You know, they're very influenced by the Beatles, very influenced by 70s punk rock, very influenced by recent grunge music, and recombines things. I think that increasingly what you're going to see and hear in pop music is this whole notion of the past as existing as contemporaneous with the present and the future, that the idea is to collapse the past and reconfigure it and use it to your purposes rather than forever sort of echo and venerate what went on in the past. And this band Oasis, I think, does a very good job. They put out an album called What's the Story, Morning Glory, and the cut of theirs that I'd like to play is called Roll With It.
And this is on your 10 best list?
Yes, it is.
That's Oasis from their CD, What's the Story, Morning Glory. We'll be back with more of Ken Tucker's Top 10 after a short break. This is Fresh Air. We're looking back on the year in pop with Fresh Air rock critic Ken Tucker. He's also a critic at large for Entertainment Weekly. Any interesting developments in hip-hop?
Yeah, I think one thing is that there was a lot more melody in hip-hop, a lot more use of the kind of strong rhythm sections and beats that gangster rap has brought to the fore, but applying much more melody to it. In this country, a rapper named Coolio, over in England, a rapper named Tricky, his brand of hip-hop is a kind of dreamy, sort of druggy genre called trip-hop. Over here, Coolio had what I think is the single of the year called Gangsta's Paradise. It was originally from the soundtrack to the movie Dangerous Minds, and it takes a melody from Stevie Wonder, again, you know, 15 years ago, and applies it to the present. And I think Gangsta's Paradise became this wonderful sort of anthem for the year.
Well, why don't we hear it?
Sounds good.
As As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left. Cause I've been blasting and laughing so long that even my mama thinks that my mind is gone. But I ain't never crossed a man that didn't deserve it. Me be treated like a punk, you know that's unheard of. You better watch how you're talking and where you're walking, or you and your homies might be lying in chalk. I really hate the trip, but I gotta low. As they croak, I see myself in the pistol smoke. Fool, I'm the kind of G the little homies wanna be like, on my knees in the night, saying prayers in the streetlight.
Been spending most of the night.
Ken, do you think that Coolio record relates to what you were talking about before about authenticity?
Yeah, I think it's a real example of an artist taking advantage of music from the past and not being intimidated by the heritage of the music, using it for his own purposes and bringing it up to date.
Any other trends or directions you want to mention?
Well, I think that you really saw the emergence this year of a number of women in very strong commercial positions. Mm-hmm. Certainly the year began with Sheryl Crow winning a slew of Grammy Awards. You know, here was a new artist who people didn't really expect on her first album out to have quite so many hit singles. I think that there was a very strong debut by a woman named Joan Osborne that I reviewed here on the show. The same with Alanis Morissette, this young Canadian singer-songwriter who, again, for a debut album, suddenly yielded at least four or five hit singles. Melissa Etheridge, I also think, is an interesting case of a woman who's completely co-opted very strong male hard rock sound and turned it into, you know, a top five act. She sells millions and millions of records. A woman who's openly gay and yet can still completely relate to that adolescent male audience whom you wouldn't think would relate to a woman artist, and she's done remarkably well. My own particular favorites by women artists that are on my list this year aren't as necessarily as commercially successful, but I think they're both very, very worthy records. One of them is by a Los Angeles band called The Muffs, and it's a really delightful record called Blonder and Blonder. The cut I'd like to play from that is called Lying on a Bed of Roses. That song by The Muffs, it's like the best Joan Jett record that Joan Jett never cut, you know? It's got full of energy. I like it a lot.
You know what I find interesting? I think some of the more commercially successful female singer-songwriters of the past year or so sing in a very high, almost childlike voice,
mm-hmm.
Very nasal.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, of course, the opposite. It's really guttural and strong and loud,
yeah.
Raspy.
Yeah.
Are The Muffs the only women on your 10 best list?
No. Much to my surprise, K.D. Lang is on this list.
Oh, you're surprised there's another woman?
No.
Oh, you're surprised it's K.D. Lang?
Yes.
So
yes.
Am I.
I haven't been a big K.D. Lang fan. To me, at the beginning of her career when she was putting out that pseudo-Patsy Cline stuff, I thought it was awful and campy, and I really disliked it. Then when she, you know, willfully turned herself into a torch singer, I thought that was very tortured and annoying. But recently she's begun to sing, I think, sort of much more straightforwardly without these trappings of irony. And this latest album called All You Can Eat, I think is really terrific. It's very, really nice middle-of-the-road ballads that I think work very well. And she sings them very straightforwardly without any of the campiness that used to infect her other records. The cut I'd like to play from All You Can Eat is a song called Acquiesce.
easy moral questions. What on earth are we to do? Offer our confessions, offer ourselves to you.
K.D. Lang, Ken, do you think she's become a better songwriter?
Yeah, I think so. She's written most of the material on this record, and I think she's really shown a lot of strength in that area. It's not so much covering older material, but kind of dealing with things that she wants to deal with in a song.
Now, I know you listen to a lot of country music. Did any country CDs make it onto your 10 best list?
You betcha. Dwight Yoakam continues to be my man. Dwight Yoakam, I think, is another example of this issue of authenticity. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, Greil Marcus accusing Dwight Yoakam of being a big phony and dismissing him in a rock critic jeremiad. But, you know, to me, that's one of the interesting things about Dwight Yoakam is that he doesn't present himself as somebody fresh out of the hills, you know. He's a really sophisticated guy, and I think on his new album called Gone, he does some really interesting things. He combines not just country music and honky-tonk, but also a lot of black music soul styles. In fact, the cut I'd like to play called Nothing, I think you'll hear in the arrangement, it sounds like a Willie Mitchell, Al Green cut from the mid-70s in its use of percussion and bass.
I couldn't change your heart, I couldn't change your mind, so I just had to learn to live with this empty life you left behind. You didn't try to hear, you didn't try to see. No, you just stared right through the teardrop like there was nothing left of me. Nothing but sorrow, nothing but pain, nothing but memories whisper your.
That's Dwight Yoakam, his CD Gone, and it's on Ken Tucker's list of the best CDs of 1995. In fact, Ken, we're not going to have time to hear excerpts of all the CDs on your top 10 list, but I'd really like it if you could just like run through the list so everybody who wants to have a copy of your list could get out their pen and some paper now and jot it down. Is this in any order that you're going
to
give it?
Yeah, it is. My order of preference from top to bottom.
Okay.
Matthew Sweet, 100% Fun, is number one as far as I'm concerned, followed by Neil Young's Mirror Ball, Oasis, and that collection is called What's the Story, Morning Glory, Dwight Yoakam's Gone, R. Kelly, soul singer who put out an album called R. Kelly, a really good live album, another country record called Hurt City by a guy named Stacy Dean Campbell. It's his second album, Hurt City. I think it's a really good old-fashioned honky-tonk record. Smashing Pumpkins put out a double CD called Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, possibly the worst title of the year, but some of the best music. Rancid, a kind of a nouveau punk band, put out a collection called And Out Come the Wolves that I think was very strong. And then the two acts that we have played, The Muffs, Blonder and Blonder, and K.D. Lang's All You Can Eat.
Well, great. Ken, thanks for being with us and for sharing your list of the best records of 1995.
Well, thanks.
I want to wish you a real happy new year.
Well, same to you, Terry.
Thank you. Ken Tucker is rock critic for Fresh Air and critic at large for Entertainment Weekly. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.